Hello, everybody, and welcome to Lady Business Plus. I'm here with Susan. Hey, Susan, welcome back.
Hi, May. Thank you for having me back.
We're here to talk about The Raven Boys and The Dream Thieves by Maggie Stiefvater, which we both loved. Well, various levels of love, I think. Susan, you were not convinced by The Raven Boys until
I liked The Raven Boys, and then The Dream Thieves happened, and suddenly, oh my god, I love it.
So it took you two books. Everybody else that I tried to get to read this book, it took one. And then there was the people that I couldn't get to read it at all. And then they accused me of harassing them. So I stopped.
I'm at least doing better than them. I mean, it only took Hitmen and Dragons and stuff to get me into this franchise.
That's what I should have done.
Yes, they're Hitmen and Dragons. You definitely need to read this book.
Next time I'll know. Look at the sequel, see if there's anything that hits Susan's kinks, and sell it to her that way.
I'm gonna be honest. I kind of went, wait, this one's actually got huge swathes from Ronan's point of view? Wasn't expecting that. Get in my face.
Oh, you thought the second book was still going to be...
Yeah. In my experience, when young adult books pick point of view characters, they stick with them. I didn't expect it to switch who it focused on.
Well, it's an ensemble cast. The first book, the story, obviously, in the first book sort of belongs to Blue, but it also belongs to all the boys, too, in different ways. And it sets up the fact that there's going to be a different focus character each time. In the first book, it was Blue with the struggle about where she fits and her power. And I think they're just going to keep moving through the rest of the characters. Although I think it's only four books, so I'm not sure who they're going to leave out at this point. Probably Noah.
Because his story is... It's not necessarily done, but it's one of the ones that fits in best as part of other people's stories.
Noah was my favorite in the first book. I lost my shit. When I got to the end of his storyline, I was like, this is so fucking unfair!
I know, it's just, no, poor baby! What? No, you can't do that to Noah!
His story made me turn around and read the books a second time when I finished it the first time, when I realized what had happened, and it becomes a much richer story for him if you read it a second time, because you're just like, oh my god, this is the most heartbreaking thing I've ever read!
And the best part of it is... He tells you up front at the start of the book, no, I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, that's odd. That's kind of a weird thing to say.
Is this kid a goth? I don't know what that means, but that's all the goth kids I knew as a child were all into like being super morbid. So that's where I took that. You know, I didn't follow through going, maybe I should pay attention. I just took it as he was some weird
kid. I thought it was
kid.
Him being funny.
Well, that teaches us to make assumptions.
Yeah. I guess that was Chekhov's gun going off properly. And then it comes up a lot more in the Dream Thieves.
Noah's an interesting character.
He is. Bless his soul. He's my favorite.
He has really... distinct relationships with all the other characters.
He does.
Although in this book, the Dream Thieves, not so much with Gandhi.
Yeah. Like, he has... It's not that he doesn't have a stronger relationship with Gandhi, it's just... It's less focused on.
It feels like, in this book, other characters need him more.
Because Blue and Ronan definitely need him more. Even if Ronan throws him out of a window.
That's true. You know what that made me think of? That made me think of Stargate Atlantis, one of the first episodes where Rodney finds a personal protection device and sticks it on himself and can't get it off. And John is like throwing him off balconies.
Hey, we tested it. How? I shot him.
Oh, bros. I love
in
it.
The leg.
I'm sorry. That was
that's the power ship of Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah, no, it is. But I just, that level of whatever playfulness is. It gets me every time. I'm super weak to violence among friends, I guess. I just revealed way more about myself than I meant to. Dialed it back.
Is this a ship we can agree on?
Yes.
Sort of-ish. Aside from the him being dead issue.
That part sucks. Which apparently doesn't matter because him and Blue, like, that was interesting. And I feel like that's going to come up again. But I don't know how.
It was one of the things of when I realized that Noah was going to be sticking around. I went, well, that could be a thing. That would make sense logically. And I didn't expect it to actually happen. And then, Blue is going to make out with the dead guy. I can get behind the ship. Except for the dead thing. That's
going to keep coming up, unfortunately. Poor Noah.
Noah is really brave.
I really...
Like, when he took on a night horror for Ronan, there's a lot of stuff where he's uncomfortable or he's scared, so he bugs out. And instead of bugging out on Ronan then, when it would have been completely understandable, no, he teleported through the roof and ended up having to scuffle with it.
So, my reaction to the Dream Thieves when I finished it was my recommendation in my year-end post where I talked about this book. I just put his name in capital letters, Ronan Lynch. And that was my reaction to this book. At the end of the Raven Boys, when Ronan turns to his friends and tells them he took Chainsaw out of his dreams, it was obvious to me what had happened, like where he got her in the first book. I just didn't understand why yet. And of all the answers to that question that it could have been, this book gave the best one. His power is about loneliness and family and trusting himself. It's also a really sad kind of power, which the book outlines when it talks about Ronan's mom and all the things in Ronan's life that he didn't think about in the same way until his father was murdered.
Yeah, I realized the thing about Ronan's mom about 2 pages before it happened, then the whole time it was just, no, is she going there with that? Is that really going to...
Yeah, she gives it up when she talks about all the animals.
Yeah, she does.
And I think that was good, because I'm not sure I would have handled it if she hadn't like led you there. With the way that the Barnes was sleeping. Because so much of the property and the things that lived in it were the dream of a man. And there's a lot to unpack when you talk about men dreaming things up and bringing them to life. What kind of person does that? What type of person springs somebody out of their dreams when they couldn't survive without the dreamer?
Well, part of the question about that is, do they know what's happened? Did Neil Lynch know what was going to happen to her if anything happened to him? Plus, I could see him as the sort of man who expects trouble to catch up with him, but doesn't believe it would necessarily stop him. I don't know about you, but I thought we got a really good sense of his character, and he just seemed to be blind charm and arrogance the whole way through.
Yeah, but he loved his family. It was very clear. But he was also very tricky about it. And I have a thing about fathers. Anyway, the will that he left behind. It feels like he wrote the will not necessarily to shut his sons out, but to make Ronan realized what he was. Because Neil knew what Ronan was when he was very young. I'm pretty sure the beginning of the book touches on that. They know. They recognize each other. So at the very end of the book, Ronan changes the will. And that I think that was always what Neil meant for the will to do. Not to punish Ronan, but to give Ronan the power to take back and protect his family.
And it kind of protects them a bit as well, because then they're not in the barns with a load of sleeping animals.
Think about how, though, that would impact Matthew or Declan. They would know, but they're not the same. That would be very startling.
Declan would know. From what I could gather, Matthew didn't know, did he?
No, I don't think he did. I think Declan knew.
He did. That's why the Grey Man went to him first.
And Ronan was the only one who had inherited his father's powers. Ronan always had to be the one to take charge, even if he wasn't the oldest, and even if Declan had more legal privileges than he did. Ronan was always meant to be the one to take over.
I am somewhat worried about how his thing with Declan's going to resolve.
That's accurate. That relationship I never really got. I mean, I understood why Declan and Ronan were at odds, but I couldn't understand why they couldn't resolve it. Sometimes I get really annoyed when there's a problem. A 5-minute conversation with adults acting like human beings could resolve it.
But you have to...
I don't know.
I think it's one of those, can they act like adults long enough to have that 5-minute conversation? Because from what I could gather, Declan and Ronan couldn't. Because Gamzee tried that. He tried to get them to talk, and it ended up in a boxing match.
I get so impatient with teenage characters. Why don't read more way?
You're possibly reading in the wrong age bracket then.
Yeah, I know. I've been told several times.
What I didn't realise was that Declan was still at school. I thought he was actually an adult. The impression I got in the first book was that he'd already graduated. I didn't realise that he was still at the school.
I don't think the first book really explains much about Declan, except for how Ronan's pissed at him and the entire world.
Yes. Ronan's... especially himself.
Ronan's anger is a character in this book.
It is.
And there was a... Switching gears to talk about Ronan and Noah again. There was a moment in The Dream Thieves where Noah tells Ronan, I know why you're angry. Mm. And Ronan asks Noah to tell him, and Noah says, I don't tell other people's secrets.
Yeah, I remember that bit.
And Ronan's anger isn't just... And I want to ask you, because I had a debate with somebody about this. Is Ronan's anger just about his father and about the not being able to go home? Is it about not being able to have Gamzee? Is it a combination of those things? Because in that scene in the store, it's not very obvious, but the way Ronan is looking at Gamzee, the way he's sizing him up, it's really sexual to me, which made me really suspicious. Actually,
I'm glad it's not just me who took that.
No, not at all. Because I think there's two facets of Ronan's anger about Gamzee. It's not just that Gamzee is untouchable in the way that Ronan might like to touch him, but also that he's not even sure that he wants to. It just might be a lack of confusion.
I always thought that Ronan wasn't just angry at one thing. His anger couldn't tie back to one. He's obviously angry about his dad, but it explicitly says he's angry at himself as well, and that's why the night horrors keep attacking him. Thing with Ronan is you can compare him to Kavinsky, and they're both very angry characters. They're both self-destructive in slightly different ways. They're both characters who express that anger by wanting to destroy things. I'm pretty sure it's explicitly there that sometimes when Ronan gets angry, he wants to burn everything around him.
You're right when you say that Ronan's anger isn't just about one thing and that he's destructive. But I think the difference is going back to a conversation that Gamzee and Blue have, where Blue misunderstands Gamzee. Because Gansy's talking about how they're all very rich, and Boo's like, shut the fuck up, you privileged asshole. And Gansy corrects her, saying, no, we're rich in love, we're loved. The difference between Kavinsky and Ronan is that Ronan was loved.
Yes, thank you. That was what I was trying to say, and then it just went out of my head.
Ronan was loved by his parents, and...
he is loved by his friends now. He has people. He may not like them all the time, but he has them, and Kavinsky has a mother that he drugs because she's an alcoholic with a cocaine addiction, and he has a minion that he dragged out of his dreams. He doesn't have anyone. Ronan does.
I think we're seeing the progression of the thieves. They all use their gift differently. You see at the very end where Ronan, when Propinko falls over after Kavinsky is killed.
Yeah, and crashes the car.
Ronan doesn't want to do that.
No.
So Kavinsky, Neil, both brought things out of the dream. People. Ronan brought Chainsaw out. But an animal is... Cue the hate mail from all the animal rights activists. An animal's different than a person.
See, I thought that the story was... not in this book, but as a future thing, was going to be leading towards Ronan having to bring someone out of the dreaming. He's taken over the dreaming for his mother, pretty much, by taking her to Cabe's Water. And there's that orphan girl who is always asking him to free her. And I don't know if that's going to be a thing in the next book or the book after.
It might be. Maybe that's the whole point. Ronan learning how to use his powers enough to bring somebody out, to want to bring somebody out.
Can you imagine what would happen if he brought his dad out of the dreaming? That would be terrible.
Oh my god, why would you even... What? What? Is that even possible?
I don't know, but he dreamt his dad up.
Is that even possible in the canon of the book? That you could go into a dream and bring out people who have died?
It's not mentioned, as far as I know.
That's messed up.
Is the place Ronan dreams Cabe's Water? Yes, it is. Or at least he can get to it. He can get to the one from the other. So I think we've just worked out how he and Gansey and everyone else are going to get to Glendower. Glendower? Glendower.
I don't know. Welsh is hard.
Yes. Yes, it is. There are not enough. Well, there are too many vowels and simultaneously not enough.
How is that possible? What kind of language is this?
One where Y turns up about as often as E.
Jesus Christ. No language needs that many vowels. If Ronan developing his power and being hesitant to bring people out is a plot point, I mean, that would be interesting. I mean, at the end of the book, Mara and Glendower are both underground. But we don't really know what that means yet. I mean, at the end of the Raven Boys, when Ronan said, I took Chainsaw out of my dreams, we didn't have any of the scope of what that meant for Ronan himself. So we don't have the scope of what underground means, especially when it involves Cabe's Water.
Yeah, because Cabe's Water is... I want to say Wibbly, that's not very descriptive.
It works if it works for Doctor Who. Wibbly, Wibbly Wombly, Timey Wimey. Accurate.
Doubly accurate for Cabe's Water.
That's an interesting theory of where it might go. I just don't know how she might develop that threat. Right. I mean, that's what fanfic is for, Susan. Come on, give me a break.
Yes. But if the fanfic isn't just Gansey and Ronan, then why is it?
Oh, God. Ah, I've made you
read
these
books. Are we going to have to have a ship war over this?
We're going to engage in a ship war. You're going to ship them. I'm going to ship Adam and Ronan. We're going to have a fight.
Until Blue and Gansey are canon, well, explicitly in the present day canon, I am okay to ship him with Ronan.
They are pretty canon right now, though.
They want to be canon, but they're not being, so it's fine.
You're going to hand wave it?
Yep, this is... You couldn't see me hand waving it, but trust me, I was doing.
Not So Secret Life of Fangirls, where we talk in depth about ship preferences.
I do see where you're coming from with Adam and Ronan, but...
Poor Adam needs a hug.
He does. Oh, God.
And so does Ronan, Adam. So they just give each other hugs. That's where I'm going with that.
Yeah,
that's...
but they won't.
I can dream. I can dream, Susan. Why do you gotta kill all these dreams I have all the time?
If you hug Ronan, it will hurt. I don't think he would accept a hug. I think if you try and hug Ronan, he will rip your throat out with his teeth. Not necessarily, but he is kind of with the sharp and the pointy in temperament.
Oh, I love Ronan Lynch. He's so great. You know how you meet characters in books, and they're so messed up, and you like them more and more the more they're messed up.
Yes. I recognize the... Like, in... the Raven Boys, I recognise the trope that Ronan kind of was, in that he is the dark and broody angry guy. And if this was a completely different series, then the thing that Blue says about him, that it would really be something to impress a guy like that,
mm-hmm.
would be the defining part of his trait. Like something like Hush Hush does that, I think.
I never not read that book.
Not read it, as my disclaimer. But then we got Dream Thieves, and it's got things from his point of view, and I didn't expect it, and it made me happy.
Part of what I like about the series and Maggie Stiefvater's writing, and this was in the Scorpio Verses too, was that even characters who, on first glance, look one note, are actually really deeply human when she focuses on them. Mm. You can't assume that the characters are one-dimensional just because you're not seeing everything. This goes back to something that John Green talks about quite often in his videos, where we have trouble imagining each other complexly. We contain infinities, but we don't extend that knowledge to other people. We tend to look at them flat and one-dimensionally. So it's the same with the characters in these books. Even the villains, she even does it with the villains. The Gray Man comes along and he's a hitman, and you think, oh god, it's a hitman. But no, he likes poetry, and he can speak in Middle English, and he is afraid of his brother who abused him as a child. And she does it with Kavinsky, who has this dark past where he was just so messed up, and it's led him to really dark places, to such places where he's stealing from Caveswater. All the characters here are really fleshed out, except for the dreams.
Yeah. They feel like they have character when you look at them and then you look away, and because it's a dream, that's what happens.
And I just found that really, really interesting. She does it with all of them, especially the adults, which I have a thing for in YA literature. I really like when adults are an integral part of the main characters' lives. Because when I was a teenager, I was close with the adults in my life. There were some adults I didn't like, obviously. I wasn't going to be BFF with some adults, like all adults. But there were adults that were really important to me that I really liked talking to and spending time with. And my parents weren't always one of them, but sometimes they were. And my extended family weren't always, but sometimes yes. And I like that her books acknowledge that reality, that adults aren't the main focus of the story, but they impact the way the characters live and the way the characters choose to make decisions. A lot of Blue's decisions are because of Mara. A lot of Adam's decisions are because of Persephone. These women are really, really important to these kids, and they become more important in this book. And I'm just wondering how it's going to change as it continues, because it's really great for me.
I'm really hoping that Calla and Persephone stay important to the story. I assume they're going to, if they don't stay important while Mora's gone. I will be disappointed.
Calla is
perfection.
She's a beautiful, sassy smartass, and I love her to death.
She is one of possibly the best adult characters I've read in a while. Like, she's a psychic who does aerial yoga and knows how to punch people. And I love her.
The internal lives of the adult characters are just really well drawn. The date that Mara goes on with the Gray Man was hilarious. And also kind of a little heartbreaking. Because
the last person she canonically went on a date with.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good.
She just seems so lonely, do you know what I mean? She's surrounded with people, but in a lot of ways she's lonely too. And you don't see that so much with her scenes with Blue. It's more visible when she's with the Gray Man. Her loneliness and how she wants to connect with somebody.
Yeah, which I think is a really cool thing, just because you do show different sides of yourself to different people. And of course you'd want to keep your loneliness away from your child. Or at least it seems in character for Mora to want to keep that away from Blue.
I also love that the fact that she gets to even have a sexual side in this book I don't want to say groundbreaking, but
but it's nice to see someone's mum actually being one of the primary romances in the book.
Because so much of her story and how she reacts with the Grey Man impacts how he later reacts to finding out that the Grey Warren is not an object, but is instead a person. And also, in the book, he kills Neil, right? He's the one who killed Neil. He beat him with the tire iron.
Which isn't a forgivable thing, and yet Maura likes him, so I want to like him. I don't know if you had that. But because we're in his head, and because Maura's so well drawn.
People do horrible things. I think it depends on the way I'm looking at him. Ronan's never going to forgive him, because Ronan loved his father desperately. And regardless of whether the Grey Man saves Ronan's life, Ronan's never going to let it go. And I can see from Ronan's perspective and completely agree that it's not a forgivable act. But I can also see from Mara's perspective when she meets somebody who doesn't need to hurt people anymore to be happy, who can have a chance to put it behind them and move on from being such a damaging individual. So it's complicated, which is my relationship with the book is a Facebook status.
Everything about this book is a Facebook status, and that is, oh god, it's complicated, because everything in this book is complicated.
So what do you think about the breakdown of Adam and Gamzee's relationship from the first book to the second book? In the first book, we see how Adam leaves his family because of the abuse and refuses to move in with Gamzee because it's too much of a handout. And in the second book, after Adam has revived the line, he continues to drift from Gamzee, and we see more and more of the breakdown between them. We see that Blue becomes a force as well. And not in a bad way either, which I thought was going to be a problem for me.
I wasn't expecting the scene where he kicked off at her to end the way it did, and I'm so glad that she was not putting up with that.
It was beautiful. And it's also, they didn't demonize either of them, which was perfect. Adam was obviously in the wrong, and the book makes you realize he's wrong. But it also doesn't demonize him for making that mistake. He gets taken in, and somebody helps him with why he's so angry and feels so trapped by Blue's inaction. But between Gamzee and Adam, Blue doesn't necessarily become an object. She's a complicated piece of their relationship, which is really important for the romance and relationship between them to work for me. If she had become an object, it would have been really awful. But
the author completely... And she does explicitly say that she is not an object in this.
Yeah, but the author completely avoids that really well, I think, by letting Blue speak for herself and make her own choices. Because it could have just been a fight over Blue between Adam and Gamzee, but instead it becomes something deeper, more tied to Cave's Water, more tied to Adam's lack of money and lack of family.
Yeah, I kind of over-identified with Adam about the not having money, but having friends who have a lot of money.
Right? It's hard to be in that position.
It is.
It's very complicated and hard to explain to people. In the first book, I really felt where Adam was coming from with not wanting to accept too much from Gamzee and take advantage of his friendship. It's something that I worry about a lot myself. I've been in that situation where friends are saying, we want to help you, let us help you. And I don't know how I can say yes and live with myself. It's hard to be poor. And it's hard for people who've never had to be poor to realize what it feels like to be poor. But when the second book started and one of the first things that happened is that Adam's tuition goes up, but his rent goes down. And his first thought is to blame Gamzee. That's where he started to lose me. That's when I started to get really upset with Adam over the way he was behaving.
I kind of understood it because he's explicitly said repeatedly, don't do this for me. I don't want your help. I don't want your money. I understand where they're both coming from. I understand that Gamzee wants to help him and that Adam can't let him. I think him blowing up at Gamzee about it was uncalled for, but I see why he did it.
But he didn't ask. That was my problem. It wasn't the fact that he got mad. But he didn't ask. He just assumed that Gamzee did it. He didn't trust Gamzee to respect that he had said no. He just assumed Gamzee went over his head. And that was my problem with, and that's where my sympathy for Adam fell apart. Because if you have a friend and you tell them to do one thing because anything else makes you uncomfortable, and they seemingly go ahead and do it anyway, that's when you go to them and say, why did you do this? And have a conversation with them about it and tell them that it wasn't cool. But he didn't do that. He just blew up at Gamzee. He didn't have the conversation he needed to. He just made assumptions that were really damaging to the friendship, when in actuality it was Ronan who did that. It was Ronan who bailed Adam out.
I think he probably blew up because they've had that conversation.
But where in the books has Gamzee ever really overstepped? Like, I've only ever seen Gamzee ask and offer, but I've never seen him overstep. He's always respected the boundaries that Adam laid out. So why in this moment, when we know why, because Cave's water was driving Adam up the wall, why was this the moment that Adam made the assumption that Gamzee had broken his trust and in turn hurt their relationship? That's what I don't understand. Because if I tell a friend, no, you can't pay off my student loans because that might make me uncomfortable and I would owe you too much money, so please don't. And then I get a letter in the mail going, oh, hey, your student loans have been paid off. I'm not going to go to that friend and be like, why did you do this? I told you not to do this. Why are you such a jerk? Why can't you listen? I wouldn't do that. I would go and ask first. And obviously Adam's emotionally compromised anyway, but this was the moment for me, and it's fine if it doesn't work for you, but this was the moment for me where he lost my ability to see why he couldn't let it go a little, just to be, not just for himself, so he could be less stressed out and worried, but also for the sake of the relationships that he had and the worry that he was causing the people who loved him. Because help isn't always negative. And Adam always constantly casts the help that people offer him as negative. He can't see it positively at all. And if you become a person who can't see help from people who love you as sometimes a positive, you're going down a really dangerous path.
I saw it as he assumed it was Gamzee and didn't want to talk about it because Gamzee was the only person who'd ever asked. Adam seems to be one of those people who can't take help, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got his pride, he's got his goal, which is to get out of on his own, and he feels like any help from Gamzee comes with strings. Not intentional, like Gamzee doesn't give people things so they owe him, but Adam would feel like he owed him anyway. And I get that, because when my partner first started offering me money as a book, you're unemployed, you need the help, I couldn't take it. This is what I was saying earlier about how I intensely over-identify with Adam.
I get it. I get the strange thing.
Needing help is one thing, but sometimes it's easier to just go, oh, no, I can't take this off you, than it is to accept that you need it and that someone else is going to give it to you.
Which is, I think, why Ronan did it, right?
Yeah.
That he knew that Adam would never accept help from Gamzee, no matter how many times Gamzee offered the help. And
yeah,
Ronan
say...
doesn't ask permission. That's not Ronan's character. Ronan doesn't ask permission. Ronan gives you some... Ronan gives you something and you fucking take it. The end. So, it's very complicated. These boys have such intensely, intensely privileged story where these boys with all this money are friends with this boy who has none, and this girl who isn't as bad off as Adam is, because what she lacks in money she makes up for the family life she has, the intenseness and richness of her familiar relationships. But it's really interesting to compare and contrast how Gansey and Ronan go through the world versus how Adam and Blue do.
And how oblivious Gansey is about it. About everything. And everyone calls him out on it when he puts his foot in it, but it's still impressive just how oblivious he is. Like when Blue first meets him and he thinks offering her money because that's the first objection she gives him is an okay thing to do.
He's very tone deaf when it comes to class privilege, which is just because of how he was raised. And it goes back to what I was saying about imagining people complexly. Gansey is really naive when it comes to money. He's so smart, but he has so little common sense about how it is to operate in a world where you just can't go and spend all your time looking for a dead Welsh king. He doesn't understand the realities of having to work three jobs to go to school. He doesn't understand the realities of sewing your own clothes because maybe you can't afford new designer clothes or new clothes, period. He doesn't understand parents not loving him. He doesn't understand these realities. He sees them, but he has a block on it somehow, so he just continues to be oblivious to the world coming out of his mouth when these things come up. And you finally start to see him realize it at the end of The Dream Thieves, I think. He believes that Ronan has, you know, destroyed the pig. And then in his conversation with Blue at the end of the book, which was heartbreaking.
It was.
Because all these veils are being lifted, not just from the mystery of Glendower and Caveswater, but also from the aspects of adulthood that he hasn't been able to see very clearly. Maybe because he wasn't ready to accept it, or he just didn't have enough data. But losing that friendship with Adam, losing that close relationship, has started to make him see more clearly what the reality of the world is like. It's not all magic and wonder and the favor of a dead king. It's, you know, debt and struggle.
And hurting your friends without even meaning to.
So on the whole, like, this book was good, but really depressing. It was great and fun, but super sad.
It was. I liked it a lot more than The Raven Boys.
Me too. The pacing was much better, which I think was probably what it was. Because The Raven Boys' pacing at the end there fell apart after the funeral. Yeah. And
I worked it out. I know I tweeted you about it. Scorpio Races and The Raven Boys, they have a goal and they do proceed towards it, whereas The Raven Boys sort of meanders in squiggly lines, and then for the last couple of chapters it's just straight line again. The pacing was off, like you said, and it didn't feel like it had set itself up properly for the ending it had. I don't know if that makes sense to you. I'm sorry, I interrupted you again.
No, you're fine. I don't know how I'll say this. Let me think. So, the part of The Raven Boys for me that felt the most out of place was the scene between the end of the funeral and the scene after it, where they're reburying Noah, his bones. I ignored it, because for me, it wasn't a really heavy criticism. But the tone felt super different. And I don't know how I don't know how that could have been fixed. It's just the scenes feel super... The emotional notes in the scenes are almost like nails on the chalkboard to me. Just the ending of that book, the way they did it. And I don't know if it was fixable any other way.
This is the book of intense feelings. Last book kind of coasted along merrily. This one is intense feelings.
There were so many things in here that... It's still really funny. There's still really funny parts of this book where I laughed out loud because some of the characters are so fucking sassy, which I'm a big fan of. But then you get stuff like the scene with Blue and Adam in her bedroom. And what kind of author is sitting in that scene in the bed? That was just really uncomfortable and startling, where Adam is forcing himself on Blue in Blue's space in her bedroom.
Yeah.
It was rough.
It was an intensely uncomfortable thing, and I think Blue handled it the best way she could. I think there was no other way that could have ended, or at least that was the best ending anyone in that could have hoped for.
I really enjoy Blue as friends with all these boys. I don't necessarily ship her with any of them except for Gansey, which is predictable. Good job, Maggie Stiefvater. I shipped the characters you wanted me to ship. I'm not sure how you managed that, but you did. I'm really, after that scene, I just got really concerned for Adam and Blue's friendship, because I really liked them in the first book, not just shipping-wise, but...
They were really good as friends. Like, on the helicopter ride.
When they went into Cave's water.
Yeah. They're comforting each other, they're looking out for each other. I thought they made really good friends. And it just seems to be that Adam is nuking half of his relationships.
Yeah, Caveswater is...
Out of pride and rage.
Yeah. Number one, his pride is not doing him any favors at this point. Because when your friends are so worried about you that they're basically going behind your back to help you is a problem. And then the Caveswater thing, where it's affecting his memory, it's affecting his mood, his emotions. And it was all interconnected, because obviously he wastes the line, and then Kavinsky begins his campaign of thieving from his dreams.
Getting Ronan's attention.
Getting Ronan's attention, and then Ronan gets involved. This is probably why I am really invested in Adam and Ronan and their relationship, because I'm really curious about how their various abilities are going to impact how things are going to play out. Because right now we have Adam, who's the magician, and Ronan, Blue's power, who strengthens spiritual energy, and then Gansey, who is the person who... What is
Gansey? He's the one on the quest.
Yeah, he's the one on the quest.
I like how it's... Everyone else has the powers of a supporting cast, but they're not the supporting cast.
Yeah.
It's properly ensemble.
Ronan's the one who knows the Latin... Adam too, I suppose, but... And Gansey has a passable knowledge. Blue doesn't know it at all. But all their different skill sets kind of bolt together, so they can't do it alone. Maybe they could have before Balan was awake, but now they can't. Going back to Kavinsky.
Oh good, I was going to ask if we could go back to him at some point.
He was stealing from the dreams. He was taking stuff out. And when Ronan is doing it, they... Is it the orphan girl who comes back and is like, why are you stealing from us?
Yes. And the trees.
And so here's my question. Could Ronan have done all that had he just asked instead of just taking? Because he follows Kavinsky's directions for stealing. But maybe the reason he struggled so long is because all he had to do was ask. He didn't need to. He never needed to steal because of who he was. Kavinsky needed to steal because he wasn't supposed to be there. He was definitely a thief. But Ronan was the Grey Warren. Ronan was the child of a Grey Warren.
I thought he said he was the child of a Grey Warren and the trees corrected him. I could be wrong on that.
Was he? I just thought they both were.
No, I think he specifically raises that and the trees say, no, it's only you.
So does that mean his father was a thief too? Just like Kavinsky was?
Possibly. I can't...
I can't remember.
Also, Kavinsky is scum.
I felt real bad for that kid.
I genuinely thought that he'd locked Matthew in the boot of the car that had been given to the Grey Man. Like, I genuinely thought that was going to be what happened.
Jesus. I'm really glad it wasn't. Poor Matthew.
There is a bit where he says, didn't you know my father? We're both Grey Warrens. And the orphan girl says that he's the only one. And I don't know if that's his dad's dead, so now he's the only Grey Warren. Or if it's his dad wasn't a Grey Warren. And the next thing she says is, in English, she added, many thieves, one Grey Warren.
So is it that...
No, here it is. It's the Grey Warren is the one that can speak to the dreams. Speak to Caveswater. There are people who can make dreams... How many can make their dreams real, but how few could speak to the dream? How he was meant to be Caveswater's right hand. So I think that's the difference between Ronan and his dad and Kavinsky.
So Ronan can talk to them, but the other two couldn't. But I don't. Do we know that Neil couldn't talk to them? Or is it that, because remember, I'm curious if that's true, because it's very obvious that Ronan is a child of the child of a dream. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. Could Neil have been the same sort of child? Or is it just saying that Neil was never...
I took it as Neil wasn't a Grey Warren. I admit I could have taken that wrong because I thought that at the end of The Raven Boys, Adam was swearing to be Gansey's eyes and hands. So what do I know?
Well, I hope he wasn't swearing to be Gansey's eyes and hands because he's kind of been addicted to Gansey, to be quite honest.
It is further proof for your ship, though, because Grey Warrens, canonically the right hand of the Caveswater, Adam, also sworn to be the hands of the Caveswater.
I win!
You win on evidence. My ship is still better.
So, whatever way it goes, and I guess we'll find out as she sets out more canon. But I like either reading of that, whether where Neil passed it on to Ronan, or if it's just Ronan by himself who's the Grey Warren. So I guess we'll find out in the next book. That's definitely going to come out this year, I hope. Maggie Sabater, please.
Isn't it due out in October?
I hope. It better be. I don't know where she lives, but I could definitely send her some flowers if I knew.
You'll send her very flattering tweets.
No, that would go against me interacting with authors. I don't know. I don't do that. I don't do that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fair.
I learned that lesson, Susan. I don't do that anymore. I don't do that sort of thing. So Kavinsky was a douchebag, but he made me laugh. In chapter 56, he says, "Hey, Lynch, I didn't leave that car for it to just sit while you blow three." And listen, it shouldn't be that funny, but I laughed for 5 minutes.
I love that was just the entire chapter.
Yes.
That was it.
That was it.
I went to an all-girls school. I didn't know any teenage boys. Is his obsession with Ronan having sex with Gansey actually as weird as it seems?
I don't think it's weird. I just think that Kavinsky was attracted to Ronan and super jealous.
Yeah.
I could be wrong in my reading of that, but I just get...
He does definitely want Ronan to be on his team rather than Gansey's. He wants them to be... working together at the very least.
He believes that Gansey and Ronan are sexually involved.
I thought he didn't. I thought he was just saying that to be a bit of a cunt.
No, I think that this is what I got from it, and you might get something different. The tone of his insults and slurs or whatever makes me think that he wanted what Gansey and Ronan had, and that's just what I pulled from it. That's my interpretation of what was happening there. He thought Gansey and Ronan had some sort of relationship and wanted Ronan to leave Gansey for him.
He did explicitly want him to leave Gansey for him.
I don't, whether or not that sexual, I don't know if the book actually explicitly says, but that's just my reading on it. That's just how I felt about it.
Well, he does drug Ronan up and then possibly start stroking him. That's canon. Well... It's canon that Ronan thought he did that, and then he's like, was that a hallucination? I don't know.
But then he loses it because he takes Matthew, which was a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't take
the Lynch brothers on.
Do not.
That's the worst choice.
Do not touch Ronan's baby brother.
No. You can touch Declan all you want. He'll just find that hilarious. But Matthew... He does seem like a really happy puppy.
Yeah.
How does he end up so happy and lovable when he's got two brothers like Declan and Ronan?
He was Aurora's favorite.
And also, I think he was the favorite of both of his brothers as well.
Also, her name?
Aurora, was
yeah,
it?
Aurora Lynch. What's that a reference to, Susan? Pop quiz.
I don't know.
Sleeping Beauty.
That was the only thing I had in my head, and that is way less subtle than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, right? I just really respect that she went there with that bit of just complete balls-to-the-wall ownership of what she was doing. It was beautiful. Because Aurora Lynch didn't exist until Neil took her out of his dreams, and he named her. Because in... Ronan's dreams, orphan girl's there, but she doesn't have a name, as far as I know. I don't really remember closely, but do you remember her having a name besides what he calls her, Orphan Girl?
He does explicitly say she's Orphan Girl. I don't remember anything else.
So I'm just assuming from my read of the book that Neil takes Aurora out of his dreams and names her. And so it's very obvious, but Neil Lynch, given his house, the state of his house, when they go into it, is not a very subtle person.
No.
And I just thought it was a beautiful touch of characterization, but also sort of disturbing.
See, my favorite part of... my favorite not subtle in any way thing was that Aurora Lynch's favorite movie is Pygmalion, which is pretty much that.
I don't know that. Pygmalion?
Pygmalion is the... the original myth is the story of a man who falls in love with a statue and brings her to life.
All right.
So he can marry her. Pygmalion is the... if it's the film I'm thinking of, is the basis for My Fair Lady. It's about a man who essentially shapes a woman from being poor and uneducated into someone who can pass for a high-class lady. So she's even less subtle there. But this is possibly because I recognized it and went, oh, I see what you did there.
This series has the sort of relationship between men and boys that I want some of the other fantasy, like the adult fantasy that I read to have, that I can't often find. Maybe I'm not looking in the right places, but it's very obvious how fond of each other they are and how much they love each other, and it comes through the narrative without them having to say it. And I just really, 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 really want there to be more YA literature like this, where boys have this kind of relationship with one another. That's not based on girls, it's not based on competition, it's not based on who's better, but it is instead based on navigating relationships with other people while still developing other relationships.
I'm sorry, don't have any recommendations for you, I'm afraid.
I know. It's really...
we need to ambush the book smugglers.
I know, we need to ask them. I think anybody who is listening, if they have any recommendations for stuff...
oh god, I forgot we were recording.
How do you forget we're recording? If anybody listening has recommendations for books that have male relationships, like The Dream Thieves does... I would really like them. Please send them to me, tweet them at us at our Twitter account, or put them on Tumblr in our Ask Box.
Or leave a comment on the Dreamwidth post.
I would really like them. That would be perfect for me. I'm just really bad at fantasy anyway. Adult fantasy. Because I have to... when I read adult fantasy, I have to get a notebook and take notes. I'm so bad at it. I'm bad at non-standard naming.
See, I'm quite bad at names, but as long as they all start with different letters, I can generally coast by. And then I get to the end of the book and try and explain it to someone and realize I can't actually spell the name of the characters. But yeah, I generally just get through it by coasting and then occasionally being surprised. I'll tell you what I find really odd about Maggie Stiefvater's stuff, though. Her female characters don't seem to have any friends their own age. Puck accurate. Didn't have any school friends. It's mentioned once as an offhand thing of sometimes school friends didn't come in because their pet or their parents had died. And Blue is explicitly not friendly with people at school.
She has acquaintances, so, but she doesn't have any close friends that she can trust with the way her life operates. And no, I agree. Neither the Scorpius and the Raven Boys or the Dream Thieves had this. And I'm not sure why. It feels like an oversight that might just be the nature of the stories she's telling, where she's telling stories about girls who struggle with female friendship. But it's starting to feel noticeable in her books.
I'm not even sure it's a female friendships thing, because both Puck and Blue have friends, and friends who are women. It's just they're all older than them.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be a friends their own age thing.
When I was young, I had friends that were my age, but the older I got, the more I started befriending people who were much younger than me in grades below me, or much older in grades above me. When I got to university, I had very few female friends my own age until I got online and found the internet. And it's a struggle because so much of our culture, like, pits girls against each other in really disgusting ways. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of commentary there that she's trying to make across her books about female friendship, but I'm not sure. I really hope that her next series features girls who are friends who are of similar ages. Because here there's these boys and they're all similar ages and they're friends. So I'd like for her to explore that next time somehow.
My brain has just given me this series gender swaps, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I would read that.
I would read the fuck out of that. Because all I can picture is that Girl Ronan would be the best character ever written.
Oh, wow. Now I want you to go on Tumblr and do, like, a fan cast gender flip for this book with actors. You should do that and give it to me.
When you get to Mass Effect, which you will, I am willing you to with my mind, I want you to get to Jack in the second game and then tell me how you think, what you think of her in relation to gender swapped Ronan.
Now I'm curious. You did that on purpose, didn't you? You're like, I
yes,
know how
I
to,
did.
I know how to make her play Mass Effect faster.
Yes, I do.
You're so sneaky.
And cruel, yes. Play Mass Effect.
I will, I promise.
Woohoo!
Back to the topic at hand. So you were kind of mad about the Raven Boys, but you really liked the Dream Thieves.
Yes. In that I stopped reading the book and went, nay, we're podcasting. We need to podcast about these books.
You made us change our topic. We were supposed to talk about Ancillary Justice until, you know, we started. And you're like, nope, we're going to talk about these books together.
My brain was full of Raven Boys and Dream Thieves, and all you would have got out of me was Ronan Lynch.
And Cast Lock.
Yes. That's literally all you would have got out of me.
I just, this book just totally subverted that trope, the bad boy trope.
Yeah.
It just took it, the trope in the first book, and just took it, put it on its head, and then drop kicked it. So I don't know when the next book in the series releases. I'm assuming, did you say October?
I think so, but I thought you said October.
I don't know.
Is there a title for it yet?
I don't even think there's a title.
Well, that's not good.
I think that they... I haven't seen a cover. I haven't seen a title. I follow her journal. I might just be missing it. But I don't think it's been released yet. Which is really painful to me because I could really use a release date. Whoever releases this book. I don't know the publisher for the...
Don't know.
Scholastic.
Scholastic, yeah. Same over here. Goddammit, Scholastic. I'm not seeing anything for it, which is annoying as all balls.
Scholastic, we need our hit. We need a cover, a title. Give us some crumbs, please. We're desperate.
Just give us the next book. That's all we want.
She's probably still writing it or editing it. Like, no pressure. Even if we had her address, all we would do is send her, like, flowers and stuffed animals and calming tea. So as soon as the next book comes out, we're going to be reading it and we'll come back and scream at each other via Skype. How about that? Does that sound good?
That sounds like a plan. We'll also possibly have a minor ship war over Twitter.
It's fine. I'm going to win. I'm going to win and convert you to my pairing.
I don't care that you will win or that I will end up writing you dodgy fic for it. My ship would still be hot.
I'm not
like the sun.
No arguments.
I just think they would be the worst influence on each other.
No, you're probably right. I'm not sure that would be a very healthy romantic relationship. But
it's got Ronan in. No relationship will be healthy until he gets put into therapy. Lots of therapy.
Poor Ronan.
I love him.
No,
why is he so broken?
Although now I understand why when I was reading this book and Anna was messaging me going, as soon as you finish, we gotta talk about Ronan Lynch. I'm like, okay, I don't, why? I mean, he was kind of cool in the first book. Well, Anna, now I understand. Congratulations. Expect an email from me. Well, I think that about does it for this topic for this time. Thanks for coming on with me, Susan, to talk about these emotional books.
Thank you for having me and for accepting some topic change at the last minute.
Very last minute topic change is fine. Don't worry. I'm still going to get you on for Ancillary Justice. You're not escaping.
I am happy to do that next week, but I just finished it and then my brain was full.
So if you'd like more inane commentary from either me or Susan, you can find me on Twitter at R-E-N-A-Y. You can find Susan on Twitter at Spindilly.
S-P-I-N-D-I-L-L-Y.
Feel free to come and emote at us about the Raven Boys and or the Dream Thieves. And especially,
Caps Lock is encouraged.
Especially Ronan Lynch. Caps Lock encouraged. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.